A reading from the book of Genesis. When hunger came to be felt throughout the land of Egypt, and the people cried to Pharaoh for bread, Pharaoh directed all the Egyptians to go to Joseph and do whatever he told them. When the famine had spread throughout the land, Joseph opened all the cities that had grain and rationed it to the Egyptians, since the famine had gripped the land of Egypt. In fact, all the world came to Joseph to obtain rations of grain, for famine had gripped the whole world. The sons of Israel were among those who came to procure rations. It was Joseph, as governor of the country, who dispensed the rations to all the people. When Joseph's brothers came and knelt down before him with their faces to the ground, he recognized them as soon as he saw them. But Joseph concealed his own identity from them and spoke sternly to them. With that, he locked them up in the guardhouse for 3 days. On the third day, Joseph said to his brothers, "Do this, and you shall live, for I'm a God-fearing man. If you have been honest, only one of your brothers need be confined in this prison, while the rest of you may go and take home provisions for your starving families. But you must come back to me with your youngest brother. Your words will thus be verified, and you will not die." To this they agreed. To one another, however, they said, "Alas, we are being punished because of our brother. We saw the anguish of his heart when he pleaded with us, yet we paid no heed. That is why this anguish has come upon us." Reuben broke in, "Did I not tell you to do nothing wrong to the boy? But you would not listen. Now comes the reckoning for his blood." The brothers did not know, of course, that Joseph understood what they said, since he spoke with them through an interpreter. But turning away from them, he wept. The word of the Lord. Lord, let your mercy be on us as we place our trust in you. Give thanks to the Lord on the harp, with the ten-stringed lyre, chant his praises. Sing to him a new song, pluck the strings skillfully, with shouts of gladness. The Lord brings to naught the plans of nations. He foils the designs of peoples. But the plan of the Lord stands forever, the design of his heart through all generations.
Lord, let your mercy be on us, as we place our trust in you.
But see, the eyes of the Lord are upon those who fear him, upon those who hope for his kindness, to deliver them from death and preserve them in spite of famine.
The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Matthew. Jesus summoned his 12 disciples and gave them authority over unclean spirits to drive them out and to cure every disease and every illness. The names of the 12 apostles are these. First, Simon, called Peter, and his brother Andrew. James, the son of Zebedee, and his brother John. Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew the tax collector, James the son of Alphaeus and Thaddeus, Simon the Cananean, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed Jesus. Jesus sent out these 12 after instructing them thus, "Do not go into pagan territory or enter a Samaritan town. Go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. As you go, make this proclamation: the kingdom of heaven is at hand." The Gospel of the Lord. Jesus calls the 12 apostles. They have a very unique mission in the church. No one else in history gets to be one of the 12 apostles. He calls the 12. They're very unique. They received special graces. And yet at the same time, they are the foundation of the church, and every Christian life is built upon the 12, and every Christian life echoes, is like the call of the 12. And so we can look at their call and see truths about our own lives as those who have been called by Jesus to follow him. And if we look at their call, if we look at the way Jesus invites them into his life, we can see the goal of our Christian life. We can see the way in which we are to live it, which is with great humility, and we can see that each of us has a mission. So the goal, the way of humility, and each of our own missions. So what's the goal? Why did he call these 12 apostles? What's his goal? There's a lot of reasons in the gospel today. So he wants to save the world from darkness and sin. That's why Jesus came. He wants to save the world from suffering. So he bestows upon these men great power, the power to cast out evil, the power to heal those who are suffering. And so he says, go heal, go drive out evil spirits, go preach the kingdom. That's part of why Jesus called them. But that's not the ultimate goal. No, the ultimate goal was expressed in one simple little word in our gospel. We heard this. Jesus summoned them. He summoned them close. Come close, you 12. Come close to me. Come spend time with me. Come be with me. The gospel of Mark, we heard the gospel of Matthew. The gospel of Mark puts it even more strikingly. He summoned those whom he wanted, and they came to him. He appointed 12, whom he also named apostles, that they might be with him, and he might send them forth to preach. He called them that they might be with him, rest with him, abide in him. At the very heart of being a Christian is this simple being with the Lord. Being a Christian is not first and foremost about fixing the problems out there, fixing the problems in here. At the very heart of being a Christian is being convinced that the Lord has called you to come to be with him. He has summoned you, and you have heard his voice, and you have approached to be with the Lord. That is the heart of being a Christian, hearing him call to you to be with him. And when he summons them, then we get a list of their names. The Lord knows them by name. His call is not a generic loudspeaker over the crowd of the world. It's not some voice simply speaking from heaven, calling anyone who will hear. He always calls by name. He always calls you. He calls you in the midst of your life as it is. It's not generic, it's personal. Come, you, come close, come be with me. We can trust that the Lord is calling us by name. Now, sometimes we don't recognize it, but the Lord always knows us. So in our first reading, we heard the story of Joseph and his brother. And one of the great mysteries of that story, one of the great insights, is that Joseph knew his brothers. He knew their sins, their betrayal of him. He knew their hunger, and they come before him, and he recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. And as he deals with them to help them convert, to acknowledge their sin, to feed them, as he deals with them in that way, the Lord sometimes deals with us in that way. We do not always recognize him. He always knows us. As we heard in the psalm, the eyes of the Lord are upon those who fear him. The eyes of the Lord are upon you, even when our eyes aren't upon him. We don't often recognize him at first when he calls us to repentance. When he says, come, come here, let me heal you, let me convert you. Often our first response is one of resistance. We're being called away from something we're holding on to. We don't recognize him always, but he always recognizes us, and he calls us by name. He calls us by name, and he knows us, and he knows what he needs to call us from. And once he summons the apostles close, and once he calls them by name, only then does he send them. Only once they have experienced his voice, only once they have experienced the truth that he knows them by name, only then does he bestow his power upon them, only then does he send them. Because that's the only stable foundation for any mission in this life, is knowing the Lord's voice and knowing that he has known us first. He gives them power, he gives them great power to heal, to drive out evil spirits, to cast the darkness from the world. He gives them great power, and I can imagine that they felt like at that moment they could have taken on the world. They could have taken on the world and overcome all the darkness. They probably felt that way when they received this great gift of power from the Lord, a gift that's unique to them. They could have felt like they could take on the world, but there's a really interesting little detail, is that when Jesus sends them out, he doesn't say, go take on the world. No, his first words were, don't take on the whole world, right? Do not go to the pagan territories. Do not go to the Samaritan towns. I'm sending you out, but I'm not sending you everywhere. I'm sending you to the lost world. Your lost kinfolk, the lost people of Israel, go there. Do not go to the whole world. Why does he do this? Why does he give them this great power and they're ready to take on the world? And then he says, yes, but only here, only this place, only now. Why does he limit their mission so much at this point? One idea, I think, is one insight would be that he wants them to go with great humility, with great poverty of spirit, knowing, knowing above all that any power they experience and any success they have is a gift from him, is simply a gift from him. And so he does not want them to think that they can take on the whole world. No, he wants them to take on the mission he is giving them. You will be powerful in the mission I give you. And of course, he is preparing to go to the whole world. The Lord is preparing his gospel for the whole world. And the person above all he prepares to take the gospel to the Gentiles is St. Paul, right? The apostle to the Gentiles. And here we're a few years from that. From St. Paul is still Saul. The Lord will go to them. He does want to convert the whole world. But for now, his apostles, he says, just go to your lost family and friends. Go there and preach the kingdom. I know a young priest, a fellow Dominican, and one time he was simply driving down the road, and he was struck by this great insight that on this busy highway that he was going on, that most people would never hear him preach. Most people would never get to hear him preach. And he realized, my mission is very small, right? There's a whole world out there. Some people, God might use me in their life. Most people, he wants them, but it's not going to be me. It's going to be someone else. It's not going to be me. I'm not going to take on the whole world. God takes on the whole world, not me. You and I, in our lives, we sometimes do want to take on the whole world or solve all the problems ourselves, right? So many Christian parents want to be the ones who bring their kids back to their faith. So many of us want to solve the pain and illness and sickness we see out there or in our families, those very close to us. And very often, God says, yeah, that's not for you. Do not go there. Yes, it might be you, but your mission will, of course, be limited. Because why? Because we're poor in spirit. And we are successful only insofar as we live and preach the mission that God has given to us. So many saints throughout the history of the church were told by God, don't go there. It's not for you. So famously, Saint Therese wanted to be a great missionary, but she stayed so close to her home in France. And look how successful her mission was. It's beautiful. It's now worldwide. How many people have been touched by the little flower? But it's because she listened to the Lord when he said, yeah, do not go there. Not now. Saint Philip Neri, another great saint, wanted to go to India. He had a burning desire to go preach in the missions. He was Italian, and the Lord spoke to him and said, no, your India will be Rome. That's not for you out there. Of course, the sons of St. Philip now are around the world, but only because he listened to the Lord when he said, yeah, do not go there. That's not for you. Each of us have received a mission from the Lord, but we have to accept with great joy that he has not asked us to be the one who goes to the whole world or to fix all the problems. His first word to us after he has called us close and spoken to us by name is said, remain poor in spirit. Remain poor in spirit. Then your mission will be fruitful. Then it will go beyond your wildest imagination. So the Lord calls his apostles close. He gives them power. He calls them by name. He says, okay, don't go there. But then he does give them this mission. Go to your lost kinsfolk. All that do not go is for the sake of this one great do go there. Here it is. Here's your mission. This is where you are to go. This is where you are to go and preach the gospel. This is where you are to go to preach the kingdom. Now go. I think that's what he usually says to us, to you and to me, where we might want to fix this problem out there or might want to have a great mission in some exotic part of our life or the world. But the Lord usually says, go to your family. Go to your community. Live the gospel there. Live the kingdom there. Go to the people with whom you interact every day in the ups and downs. Go to your community and live the gospel. Preach the gospel. day by day, even when you're tired, even when you're exhausted, live with the Lord and live in your community and know that your mission is there and that He has sent you, that He has sent you there to be His apostles today. The apostles, of course, had a unique mission. Of course, they had unique graces. Of course, they had a unique relationship to the Lord. And yet they are still, for us, our model, our foundation. And so what we see in them, we know the Lord is accomplishing in us, that He wants to accomplish in us even more every day. What He most wants to accomplish in your life is that you have a great intimacy with Him, because He has summoned you to be with Him, to abide with Him. He has called you by name to come be with Him, and He has asked you to remain in great poverty of spirit, knowing that your mission will be simple and small and yet very fruitful. And when He tells you to go on your mission, to go live the gospel and preach the gospel, remember that you never actually have to depart from His presence, right? He calls them close and He sends them out, but He goes with them. He goes with us. We leave, but we never leave His presence. We will go out after this Mass, go and announce the gospel. You will go out after this Mass, but you will not leave His presence. And in fact, your mission will be only fruitful insofar as you remain in His presence. He has sent you to go out and to be His apostles and to know above all that the drama of the Christian life is usually not something very dramatic or foreign or out there, far away. No, the drama of the Christian life is learning to remain in His presence even as you preach the kingdom in your family, at your work, in your community, wherever you may be. And if that is our great goal, to abide with Him, to remain with Him, and to be His apostles, then we will already begin to experience what we're promised in heaven, where our great joy will simply be to be with Him, to know that He knows us, and to know Him, and to learn to call Him by name as He has called us by name. Remain with Him, be His apostles, and know that the Lord has called you by name.